It was just before Valentine's Day that Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonin Scalia died suddenly, creating a vacancy on the court. It was shortly before Easter that President Obama named a potential replacement. We're now past Memorial Day and headed for the 4th of July, with no sign of action from Senate Republican leadership to either holding a hearing on Garland Merrick's nomination or a vote of the full Senate. Democrats in the minority party can do little, but they can say plenty. And Senator Jeff Merkley is in Oregon on recess talking about the Supreme Court nomination and other issues. Senator Merkley, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you, Jeffrey.
So I'm not at all surprised to hear that the Supreme Court vacancy and the nomination of Merrick Garland came up at the U of Oregon Law School yesterday. What is happening?
Well, in fact, nothing is happening, and people should be outraged by that. This is the first time that Senate leadership has gone on a job strike on a Senate Supreme or on a Supreme Court nomination, and it's completely contradictory to the Constitution. Article 2, we swore to uphold the Constitution. It says the president shall nominate, the Senate shall provide advice and consent, and that means that they will vet the candidate and determine whether that individual is a fit character to hold the office.
So you met with Judge Garland before recess. I mean, if there were a vote, would you vote for him?
I would. I was very, very impressed by him. We talked about a whole range of issues. He can't comment on particular cases, but he can lay out the way he thinks about the issues. And he's clearly extremely knowledgeable. This is someone who was confirmed overwhelmingly for his position as a circuit court judge. It is an individual that conservatives have said if the president would only nominate someone like Merrick Garland, we'd be happy to confirm him. Of course, then the president did nominate him, and really, folks, we have to understand how exceptional this is, how this polarizes the Supreme Court. It's one thing to vet a candidate and vote against them. That is the advice and consent rhythm. But to simply say that you're not going to do anything to hold a debate, to hold a Senate committee hearing, a committee vote, a floor debate, a floor vote, means that we are completely abdicating. And when I say we, it really what I'm talking about is the Senate Republicans and the Senate leadership have simply said they will not do their job. They will not do their responsibility. This has never before happened in the history of the United States.
I noticed that Senators Mitch McConnell and Chuck Grassley, the Senate Majority Leader and the head of the Judiciary Committee, appear immune to pressure. I mean, so I noticed that you've been pumping out on Twitter the "Do Your Job" hashtag. Is it working?
Well, it certainly hasn't turned the Senate around, but it's important to understand that what this is an effort to pack the court. It is an effort by Republican leadership to say, let's simply sit on our hands for more than a year. Then we might have a Republican president, we might get a right-wing nominee, and then we can basically bias the court in a direction that, quite frankly, is way out of the mainstream. And it's so contrary to our We the People Constitution. In fact, if folks are wondering, why is this happening? One has to understand the role of money in politics today. What Buckley versus Valeo, the Supreme Court decision 40 years ago.
It said money is speech.
Yeah, well, and then Citizens United, which said corporations are people, together they have unleashed a huge amount of, you know, billions of dollars of cash from the right wing that basically change our country from government of, by, and for the people, as President Lincoln characterized it, to of, by, and for the privileged and the powerful. And the Koch brothers just by themselves weighed in with hundreds of millions of dollars in the 2014 Senate elections. They won most of races around the country. Fortunately, here in Oregon, Oregonians essentially threw them out of our state. Thank you very much, fellow Oregonians, for doing that. But they took control of the Senate, and the Senate is beholden to them, and the Koch brothers are the puppet masters at this point, and they say, we do not want a chance of a Supreme Court reversing Citizens United or Buckley versus Valeo, so therefore go on a job strike. And to the great embarrassment of many senators and to the great kind of tragic polarization of the court, they have complied with the puppet masters.
Senator Jeff Merkley, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So as long as we're talking about money in politics, and this is a political year, obviously, Bernie Sanders, you are the lone ranger in the Senate. How did you end up being the lone guy in the U.S. Senate supporting Bernie Sanders?
Well, the vast bulk of my colleagues endorsed early in the campaign. The folks thought there'd be only one viable candidacy, and that was Secretary Clinton. And I must say, say some of them are a little, well, I'd say all of them are a little surprised with Bernie's success and the resonance of his message. I endorsed him because I wanted to do so a couple weeks before the ballots were mailed out in Oregon, and therefore to have the endorsement make some impact, if you will. And quite frankly, it looked like Bernie, there was only one poll in Oregon, and that poll had Secretary Clinton winning by 15%, and then Bernie wins by 13%. How does a pollster get 28% wrong? That's an unheard of level of error. But what I heard in my town halls, and I've had 24 of them this year, is a tremendous grassroots energy for the vision that Bernie Sanders was advocating for, a fierce effort to take on the pivot away from fossil fuels and towards renewable energy, to take on global warming. And he, by the way, I invited both campaigns to come and endorse my Keep It in the Ground bill. And Bernie Sanders immediately said yes, and the Secretary Clinton's campaign didn't show up. And I think it shows a kind of a difference in the energy that they have on and commitment and passion for this topic. Same as cash in politics. Bernie Sanders, a real leader in laying out the vision, the corrupting influence of our current campaign system. And he's also extremely passionate and determined about creating living wage jobs in America. And these are things that are fundamentally important to turning our country around and putting it back on track.
We have a call here from Bill in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat from Oregon.
Yes, I wanted to comment on the Bernie Sanders thing. Jeff Merkley and I have always agreed on things, and I still do. I voted for Senator Merkley and probably will continue to do so. But respectfully, Senator, I believe that you've lost control of your senses. I'm not talking about political philosophy now. We all agree with a lot of what Senator Sanders stands for, but let's get focused here. It's what's the important thing is to get avoid having the terrible person, the Republican, elected. Let's stay focused, and for you to continue to endorse and push for Senator Sanders is harmful to that effort. I say this respectfully, but frankly, Senator, I think you've lost control of your senses.
Well, you're not the only one to let me know that. But let me tell you why I disagree with you. And it's this: if the Democrats are going to win in a campaign against Trump, and now Trump is a showman. He's self-serving through his entire lifetime. He's a charlatan. He has basically put forward that he's for working people, and he clearly has not woken up thinking about working people and their benefit a day in his life. He's woken up every day thinking about his own profit. And he'll say anything, do anything to advance his brand, and including this candidacy. But if you want to win a campaign against this individual, you have to have the grassroots passion on board. You will not have that passion if, for example, many people had said Bernie should get out of the race before Oregon, he should get out before California. There's still six states that are going to vote next Tuesday. If let's suppose for a moment that Secretary Clinton wins a majority of the pledged delegates, and in my mind, if she wins a majority of the pledged delegates, at that point, she is the nominee. And we need to come together behind her. But to make that happen, you have to have treated respectfully the citizens that you want to come together. They have to have had a chance to express their views, the ability to vote. You can't slam the door on them today and then a month later open the door and say, please come in and help us out. That doesn't work.
I have an email that came out of your campaign yesterday about supporting Bernie and asking people to donate. And I'm curious about some of the wording here. Show that we're standing up to a rigged economy and hijacked politics. The rigged economy, I think you just explained in terms of family wage jobs. Hijacked politics sounds like the same sort of terminology that was being used after the Nevada State Convention. And I wonder if you're getting into a zone where people get excited thinking that the whole system is against counting their votes.
Now, the hijacked politics is really a reference to the cash in politics, Citizens United. It is the inordinate influence that the super wealthy have. Now, Jefferson, President Jefferson, he proceeded to say, we can only claim to a republic to the degree that the decisions of the government reflect the will of the people, and that will only happen, this is very important, only happen if the people have an equal voice. Well, that was the vision of the town commons, where each person could stand up and have their say. But What we have today is a town commons that is for sale. It is television. It is radio. It is the web. And the courts have basically said the rich can buy it. They can be a stadium sound system drowning out the voice of the people. That's what I'm referring to.
Jeff Merkley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You have some business in Southern Oregon later today, is that right?
Well, yes, we're going to do an event at the Veterans Center, basically celebrating that Dan Davis, a Southern Oregon veteran, came up with an idea a year ago that we had to greatly simplify the way that veterans can access a suicide hotline. It was really an absurd system, and he proposed changing that. We took his idea to the Veterans Administration. Veterans Administration said that they were well aware that this was a problem. They were working to come up with a solution, and they have now come forward with a much better system. And instead of dialing 1-800 number and being told another number that you have to hang up and recall, you'll be able to dial the first number and then dial the number 7, and it'll put you right into the suicide hotline.
Why was it so cumbersome in the first place, which is, I think, a question people have about federal government generally?
Well, it's an excellent question. The veterans had laid out a crisis line, but not specifically a suicide line. They realized special expertise was needed for those who were contemplating suicide, so they set up a second number, but then the crisis number was the one that was publicized, so you had to go through this double system. Nobody in crisis is prepared to write down another number or memorize it at that moment of emotional depth. So this makes a lot more sense.
Senator Merkley, I noticed you toured the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge recently and then had a town hall in Burns. Obviously, the community differed on approaches to what happened at the refuge by the people who took it over for 41 days. The underlying issues, do they still exist there? Were you hearing a lot of the questions you heard in Burns previously at this most recent meeting?
So the core topic was certainly raised of feeling that the federal government often is a long-term landholder and families have long-term grazing leases, and that the federal government often doesn't understand all that the ranching families put into developing the land, making it productive, caring for it, and proceeds to give them too many rules, if you will, for how they're operating their grazing. So that's an underlying sense. You know, the government is a landlord. It's far away. It isn't out of the community itself, and it's a setup that's going to have some friction. But the thing about being there in Harney County was that is a place where stakeholders have come together time and time again. They came together in a cooperative on the Steens Mountain. They came together in a cooperative on the management of the Malheur Refuge. They came together on a forest collaborative. So it really is the wrong place for that protest to have been held, in the sense that this is a rural community that has worked hard to bring different factions together and has done so successfully.
What is the a separate topic here? What's the status of the efforts to give marijuana businesses in states where marijuana is legal some banking privileges?
Well, this is a real challenge for the Oregon businesses, both on the those states that are medicinal marijuana and those states that are recreational marijuana. The entrepreneurs are carrying bags of cash. And yesterday, I accompanied an entrepreneur who had $70,000 in a backpack, and we went down to Salem for him to pay his monthly taxes. You can imagine how carrying around $70,000 in a backpack or a gym bag is a scary thing. You're worried about people breaking in. You're worried about being mugged. You're worried that the cash economy will be an opening for organized crime or money laundering. It's just a lose-lose proposition. So I put forward an amendment in the Appropriations Committee last year that would enable our marijuana entrepreneurs to utilize the banking system, and that passed committee. And I will be putting it forward again this year, and I expect it to pass the committee. Unfortunately, it was stripped out in the conference with the House, but the House is becoming more open to this, and Earl Blumenauer has been leading this effort on the House side. And so I hopefully this year we'll win in both houses and get it to the president.
We should point out here that it's not a constant barrage of stuff that the Senate will do and the House won't do, and things that one party will do and the other won't do, because you got some cooperation, it looks like, on a chemical safety bill. What were you trying to do there? And wow, those are some impressive numbers.
Yes, well, we have had a completely dysfunctional system on toxic toxins in our everyday products. We did this project that involved scientists from Oregon State University and the Environmental Defense Fund, and people wore these silicone bracelets that pick up all the chemicals you touch through your life. So volunteers wore them for a week, and they were analyzed, and people were shocked about all these toxic chemicals they encounter. It might be in that plastic three-ring binder. It might be in the surface of this table. There's cancer-causing fire retardants in the carpet we're standing on. Can you imagine your baby or my baby has been crawling around with their nose an inch from the carpet, and they're breathing in the dust laden with cancer-causing chemicals? This is because we haven't had an effective toxics bill. The last time we even tried was 1991 when we failed on asbestos. So the rewrite of this is incredibly important. I've been immersed in it. It has passed out of both the House and the Senate, gone to a conference, repassed the House with more than 400 votes out of 435 voting members of the House, came to the Senate, and Rand Paul blocked it on Thursday. So we're hoping this week we're in state. Next week we'll be back, and we're hoping we can get it through the Senate and on to the president.
You'd mentioned the money in politics and Citizens United, and years before that, Buckley versus Vallejo. There is a legislative effort to address Citizens United through the legislative process, but is it dying for lack of Republican sponsors?
Yes.
Short and sweet.
If one thing you can be sure of, Republican team will not touch a reform. They will not even touch disclose. Their disclosure, the Disclose Act is something that many Republicans had advocated for in the Senate during the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform debates. They would say, well, we aren't for a limit on the amount of cash that can be donated. What we think disclosure is the sunlight that disinfects the system, senator after senator after senator. And then when it came time to vote on Disclose Act, well, we think it's an invasion of privacy for people to have to disclose what they're giving. I mean, they flipped completely, and that's the influence of the Koch brothers and friends.
All right. Senator Jeff Merkley has to go at the bottom of the hour, so we'll have to say goodbye to him here. Thank you so much for spending time with the
You're
audience
welcome.
Here at the Jefferson Exchange. And our apologies to the folks still waiting on the line, but Senator Merkley does have to go. He is Oregon's junior senator, first elected in 2008, reelected in 2014. Thanks again for joining us on the Exchange.
You're welcome.